With tensions high between police and communities, it can be difficult for people to understand what each side wants. We wanted to try to do just that, to give police and protesters a chance to sit down face to face and discuss their thoughts and concerns. Coming up, you'll hear a discussion with Sergeant Dave Mutchler, president of the River City Fraternal Order of Police, Tara Pruitt, a local Black Lives Matter activist, and David James, a Louisville Metro councilman. I'm Jake Ryan. Our conversation begins with Councilman James discussing how Louisville fits into the national conversation of police and people.
I think the protests locally are not so much focused on the Louisville Metro Police Department as it is policing as a whole for the entire body. But I also think that locally it is people crying out to say we want a better relationship with police and we want to be respected by the police department and that we understand that most police officers are great police officers and do a great job, but there are a few people that do bad things and we want you all to do something about it and we want to feel some level of trust and comfort when we go out to do things and when we have encounters with law enforcement. And I think that's what the protest is really saying locally.
Tara, what do you think about that? I mean, do you agree with that? Do you think that there's something else going on here locally?
I mean, he pretty much hit the nail on the head with that. And I do agree because Louisville is a great city. It is pretty progressive in comparison to other cities. There hasn't been many issues with the police per se. So I think that, you know, what he's saying is correct. And it's just the issue of police accountability. I think that a lot what people don't understand is that, because myself, I'm a part of Black Lives Matter movement, of course, is that we're not, you know, anti-police. We're anti-police brutality. And we just want accountability. And my thing is, I always say that if you're on your job and you don't do your job properly, they're not just going to say, oh, okay, that's okay, slap you on the back and say, keep working. If you continue to do the wrong thing, you're going to get in trouble. You're going to have consequences. And it should be the same way with police officers. If you do stuff that's not correct and it's not according to protocol, not what you're taught, then yes, you should be held accountable for that.
Sergeant Mutchler, I want to ask you your opinion on, you know, the national scene as it's compared to what's happening locally.
I think that it's sort of a trickle-down effect. And I think that it's hard. I understand what these two are saying, that it's not so much maybe about the Louisville Metro Police as it is about policing in general. But it's hard to explain that or tell that to the police officers here when people are in the street protesting, chanting about accountability and you know, changes or whatever it is that they want made. And it's hard not to believe, well, they're in Louisville. They live here, well, most of them. Live here and they're in the street protesting. So why would they be protesting in the middle of the street if they're talking about police in another state or somewhere like that? They've got to be talking about us, you know, and what is the issue then? What are we doing that is so wrong? I think is how most of the members feel.
I want to get to how your members feel about these protests in a little bit. Tara, I want to go back to you about, you know, why are we, and more specifically, you know, why are we seeing protests here? A few weeks ago, there was the march from the Ann Braden Center where hundreds of people turned out. Why do you think we have such a response locally?
Well, because the thing that, like you said, it is a trickle-down effect. And the thing of it is that police officers in every city, in every county, every state, there are those that profile, that racially profile. There are those that have those stereotypes about people, black people, people of color. You know, there are people that are being stopped by police officers unnecessarily, you know, such as with the Viper Squad. You know, I've seen myself with that where they've stopped people unnecessarily. You know, it literally, they were just walking down the street, minding their own business, and they were stopped and pulled over. For what reason? To me, that feels like harassment, especially when those same people, it seems to happen to them on a regular basis, and it's a particular community, which is usually the West End here in Louisville, are predominantly majority black communities is where there's a heavy hand of policing.
Sergeant Mutchler, how do you respond when people say that type of stuff, when people say that black communities are targeted disproportionately by police?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't use the term targeted. I think that obviously when we have a certain number of police officers that work here in Louisville, and there's only so many to go around. And you have to look at, You know, where are most of the calls for service coming from, and where is most of the crime coming from? And you have to send an appropriate amount of police officers to those areas to try to address that. You know, if we have, obviously we have a spike in murders here in Louisville. And for, you know, the Louisville Metro Police Department to send extra detachments of officers to Shelbyville Road, it just doesn't make any sense with that going on. I'm not saying that Shelbyville Road shouldn't be policed, but if you're trying to address the crime and where most of it is occurring, as far as the numbers that you have to try to address it at those locations. And I would also say that it's important to make sure that folks know exactly what happened or happens when there is a police encounter with a citizen. For instance, like talking about, I've seen people walking down the street and they're just stopped. Well, I'll tell you, obviously there has to be reasonable suspicion in order for someone to be stopped and detained, obviously. But there's nothing that prohibits an officer from if someone's walking down the street, from me saying, hey, can I talk to you for a minute? And if they say no and walk away and I don't have reasonable suspicion to believe they've committed a crime, obviously they can just walk away. But, you know, one of the things that police officers utilize are small, low-level violations in order to make contacts with people. I can guarantee you that, you know, the 9th Mobile Division's out there, and if they stop somebody because they ran a red light or didn't stop for a stop sign, they're probably not concerned about the stop sign or the red light, but it's a way to make contact with people in a part of the community where there's a lot of violence or crime right now. And if they make contact with those people and there's nothing to be gleaned from that, well, then, you know, perhaps they don't even write a citation for it. But I think it's important to not speak so much in generalities about, you know, what's occurring. People are being stopped without cause, or officers are just pulling people over because they're black or because they're in this neighborhood, when in fact, you know, nobody except the person that was involved in the stop, obviously, and the police probably know exactly what really happened there. And we should find those things out before we make, you know, general statements like the police are out there and they're profiling and that's what they're doing. Because I will tell you this, obviously, racial profiling is against the law, first of all. But we do profile. We criminally profile. That's what we do. That's what police officers are supposed to do. If we see suspicious activity, we monitor that activity. And if it comes to a point where there's reasonable suspicion to believe that somebody is doing something criminal or there's something going on that shouldn't be going on that's possibly criminal, then we can further investigate that. But we absolutely have to criminally profile. That's what we're here for, to enforce the law and to stop crimes, hopefully, if we can. Unfortunately, most of the time we're responding. And it's hard, you know, when you have 750,000 people to be extremely proactive with 1,200 officers.
I want to talk about the efforts, since Ferguson, for LMPD to engage with the public. We've seen that Coffee with the Cops series, a lot of peace walks here lately. Tara, what do community members feel about these efforts to engage, the peace walks, the Coffee with the Cop type things? You know, how are those being perceived in terms of true relationship building methods?
Well, I can say overall, most people appreciate it. They really do, because it is showing an effort that the police are really trying to reach and extend that olive branch to reach out to people to be in the community. Like I said, I think it's just one of those issues where you have a group of people, our community, that has had such bad experience overall. Again, not all, but overall, they've had such a bad experience with the police that it is going to be hard for them to willingly open, you know, with open arms say, okay, yeah, let's be buddies, let's walk, you know, thanks for coming in my community. You know, it's not going to happen. So it's going to be one of those things where he said, I know it's hard, but it is going to have to be something that's going to have to be continuous. You know, it can't just be for show. And a lot of people feel that it is just for show right now. So, you know, 2 months from now, 6 months from now, is this still going to be going on? And, you know, that's the thing. Are they actually still going to be coming into the community to actually speak to those people, to get to engage them? You know, and is there going to be an effort to hire more police officers? Is there going to be an effort to make that time for them to actually become beat cops? Is that going to happen? Because that's what's going to have to happen for it to start to break into that realm.
Councilman James, former cop, have you learned anything new that you maybe wish you knew when you were a police officer in terms of improving your relationship or improving the residents' experience with you when you confront them or you pull up to them at a traffic stop or knock on their door because of a complaint?
I think that I think part of that has to do with training. I think that I used to be in the training academy of the police department and worked there. We never really trained police officers to get out of the car or walk down the street and say, and engage people, you know, knock on their door just out of the blue, you know. And for some people, that might be something that's way outside of their comfort zone. And so the first time they're ever told to do that is when they're in roll call with their sergeant. The sergeant says, Mutchler, today I want you to go and knock on three or four doors down on whatever street. And Mutchler's looking like, what do you want me to say to him? What am I supposed to do? For some people, that's a strange feeling, and they don't know what they're going to do. So I also think that during the police academy, that's something that we should talk to officers about and show them how to do it, you know. And it may seem like common sense to a lot of people, but for some people in their experience in life, that may not be very comfortable, right? If I am a African-American officer, I am. So, and all of a sudden I get stuck into a 100% or 90% Caucasian part of town, and you tell me to go walk down the street and knock on somebody's door and say hi, depending on my life experiences, that may not be a very comfortable situation. Or if I'm a Caucasian officer and I've never been around very many African-Americans, and you tell me to go walk down Dumanil and knock on some people's doors, that may not be a very comfortable situation, and that may not have a good outcome. So we have to prepare people for that.
Last week, Mayor Fisher announced that he would establish a citizens advisory board that would kind of examine the police training protocol and give recommendations, suggestions. Tara, what do you think about that?
I think it's a good start. I think that it's a start in the right direction to be able to let them know, like, from the community standpoint, what, like, Councilman James was saying, like, what we feel would help out with the relationship. So I think it is a good start in the right direction.
I think it's extremely important at the beginning that the mayor, whomever is going to be in charge, make sure that the folks on that panel understand what exactly it is they're going to be doing. What are they supposed to be reviewing? What suggestions are they supposed to make? Because the problem that I see with a citizen advisory board like this is that you're going to have citizens, whether it be clergy or just citizens that from all over the community that don't have any police training or any knowledge of police training. And I guess my question would be, what type of suggestions are they going to make that we would implement if they don't have any knowledge of how police are trained and why right now? Because I think, we still have people out there that think that when deadly force is used against an officer that, we should shoot them in the arm or shoot them in the leg or shoot the gun out of their hand. I mean, we can't have, untrained people that are uneducated on police training, like in an instance like that, making suggestions on how officers would deal with deadly force incidents. It would be like me, going to a concrete factory and explaining how they need to train the guys that form foundations. I don't know anything about that. That's not my job. So I'm not sure how that's going to work out.
You're listening to a conversation between Sergeant Dave Mutchler, president of the River City Fraternal Order of Police, Tara Pruitt, a local Black Lives Matter activist, and David James, a Louisville Metro councilman. We'll be back with more after a break. You're listening to WFPL. Welcome back to The Next Louisville, a partnership between WFPL and the Community Foundation of Louisville. This hour, we're hosting a conversation between Sergeant Dave Mutchler, president of the River City Fraternal Order of Police, Tara Pruitt, a local Black Lives Matter activist, and David James, a Louisville Metro councilman. I'm Jake Ryan. We start this segment with the question of whose role it is to de-escalate tense interactions between police and citizens. Sergeant Mutchler begins.
I think that's a role that every officer takes on themselves every day. I can tell you that it is not a bag of fun to be involved in a critical incident. It's a criminal investigation, especially. It's not fun if someone lost their life. I mean, we're talking about the loss of a human life that a police officer was involved in. And that's going to be scrutinized, as it should be. In fact, officers welcome the scrutiny because, in fact, it is the scrutiny itself that leads to the actual evidence that we, you know, that is presented and can be shown to the public that this is why this happened. But I think all officers attempt to de-escalate if a situation is escalating. You know, and we have a force continuum that we have to use, and we can try to de-escalate situations. And at the same time, however, there's only so much de-escalation you can do depending on how quickly the situation might be escalating. If we're trying to talk to someone and they're erratic and they're upset, you know, and they're becoming, you know, they start to become violent, at some point we have to transition from, you know, de-escalation to we've got to stop what's going on here. I mean, if I'm trying to de-escalate a situation and somebody pulls out a machete or something like that, it's kind of time to stop the threat, and the de-escalation didn't work at that point. And these things happen very quickly.
Do you think police officers should be the person to first attempt to de-escalate the situation?
I think there's a line there. If you're talking about police taking police action or doing their sworn duty, yeah, I mean, I think that officers do try to de-escalate situations, and they do take that lead to do that because they're obviously there for a reason. And we, you know, we can't just, oh, this person's not happy that I'm here. I'm just going to leave now. Now, there is another part when we're talking about social issues or having conversations about what's going on around the country, you know, and or citizens and officers who are, by the way, citizens as well. A lot of people forget that, voicing their opinions or having dialogue that may not be in agreement with, you know, other citizens or some groups. I don't think that folks should, I don't think that officers have to de-escalate the use of their First Amendment rights or their constitutional rights. But obviously when we're on duty and on the street, we have a job to do, and that takes priority over opinions and things like that.
When an officer goes off duty and they go maybe to Facebook and they post a post that enrages some people, mm-hmm. do you think that officers shouldn't do that? I mean, that has led to controversy, even here locally. Do they have a responsibility to hold back rhetoric that may be fuel to the fire?
Well, I mean, you've got a fine line here between, obviously, everyone has a right to voice their opinion. You know, that's their First Amendment right. There are some occasions, however, that although you have protected free speech, you are not necessarily protected from the consequences that come from that speech. But there's a very fine line there as far as, you know, officers that are, you know, off duty on their own time stating their opinion, although it may anger someone else. You know, and in fact, you know, one thing I'll tell you is that social media has sort of turned into a way even for officers to vent, because especially when they're on duty, officers don't have a right to do that. They have a job to do when they're out there, and their opinion or their thoughts or whatever don't matter when they're out on the street. They have a job to do, and that's uphold the law and protect, you know, the citizens, and that's what we do. But when it comes to being able to vent, you know, we don't go out and have protests, and we don't, you know, throw bottles and rocks and chant that we want people dead and things like that. We vent on Facebook. I think it's a lot safer, actually.
Tara, I want to ask you, do you think that venting on Facebook can add fuel to the fire? What does that do to this situation that we are all in right now?
Well, I mean, Facebook, social media, people can get on social media and say anything they want to. I call them keyboard gangsters because a lot of times people say stuff on social media that they wouldn't say in person. But also, too, what people say on Facebook is pretty much what they believe. So, you know, if you're saying as an off-duty police officer, you know, I'm not saying I've seen this, but I'm just saying in as far as example, if you're saying as an off-duty police officer, you know, shoot them all, or I'd run them all down if they're in the street, then that's going to make me question how you do your job. Because if you're thinking that way off-duty, then what are you thinking on duty? You know, so it does add fuel to a fire in a sense on both ends, you know. And then there are people on the other end that may say, you know, that they want them dead or whatever, however. But that doesn't speak for everybody. And I think that's the thing that it comes down to, period. You know, with the protesters and then the outliers, those don't speak for everybody. Just like people say, you know, all cops aren't bad. Well, all protesters don't throw bottles and don't yell that they want police officers dead. So, you know, it's like you can't paint that broad stroke with everybody. If it goes one way for one group of people, it has to go the same way for the other group of people.
And I would agree with that, absolutely. But I don't think that that's what's happening in reality. I think that movements like Black Lives Matter, I've looked at their website and looked at the founders, some of the women that founded it and things like that, and they have all of these things that they purport, that they support, but I haven't seen any of that. What I see is hatred toward the police. And that's what my members say.
That's incorrect. I mean, that's your opinion, but that's incorrect.
How so? Please, more specific.
I mean, we've never said that we hate the police. You never hear. You may hear individual people to say that, but as far as Black Lives Matter, especially Black Lives Matter Louisville, we've never said we hated the police officers. We've never said we wanted them dead. We've never said anything of the sort. And most people that I know that are part of the movement, that are protesters, never say that. So that's one of those things where, again, it's outliers that say that, that do that. So that's an issue that you have to take with them. But overall, we just want accountability. Like I said, again, it's not about that we hate cops. All of us have family and friends that are cops that we love, that we know that they go out there and they have a job that they have to do. And we have to worry about if they're going to come back home every night. We get that. But also, like I said before, when you do your job, you're going to be held accountable. Any job that you're in, you're held accountable for what you do right and what you do wrong. The same should go for the police, period.
So why do you think that the concept behind Black Lives Matter is a hatred against police?
Well, I mean, I think if you look at it from a national perspective, and it's sort of a trickle-down, and that's the other issue with Black Lives Matter, is that it is it's sort of a combobulation of different groups that have issues. You know, you got Louisville to Ferguson and things like that. That don't. Some of them say that they're part of Black Lives Matter. Some of them aren't. But you don't have it doesn't seem like one big, huge core group of a Black Lives Matter movement. It seems like it's a bunch of groups together that want to you know, be part of that movement, so to speak. But if you look at nationally what's going on, and I don't think there have been huge issues here with Black Lives Matter Louisville necessarily. But if you look at nationally the issues that are going on, you know, we're talking about painting the broad brush. If you look at the numbers, it's pretty simple math. I mean, you have very, 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 very few incidents. There are 800,000 law enforcement officers in this country. And if you look at even the ones that are justified, the controversial uses of force by the police, the number is so low compared to the contacts, the millions of contacts that we have with citizens, it's unbelievable. We have a better record than the clergy, for God's sakes. I mean, it's, you know, if you were to, so the point is, what is the, that's our question. Why is this movement about, we want accountability from the police? We have officers that have been charged with murder nationally. It's not like these use of force incidents happen and everybody goes, we don't need to look at that. These are investigated. These are played out on the media. And sometimes that's part of the problem.
Tarek, can we take an investigation, a Department of Justice investigation? Why aren't these being taken as fact? As, you know, why don't those close the door on protests?
Right. The issue that people have, and again, this is where it comes down to, truthfully, you're never going to understand my perspective as a Black woman, you know, and that's the thing. You're never going to understand my perspective as a Black person in America. So we have history, whether people want to believe it or not, we have history where there's been underhanded stuff that has been done. That even though the DOJ report reports that, there may be people who, yes, part of that may have been true or most of that may have been true, but then there may have been other things that happened that wasn't reported. You know, like we say all the time, these videos that come up of these shootings, there's many more that aren't seen and that happen. And it's that situation where you know, I experienced this, I've experienced this, people that I know have experienced this. So it's going to be hard to convince somebody who has experienced this their whole life to say, okay, just trust the facts, when we've trust the facts. You know, with Rodney King, it was on videotape. You know, yes, he wasn't the perfect person. Usually, you know, that doesn't matter. He still didn't deserve to get beat, but we were supposed to trust the facts and they were let off. So it's the situation of how do you deal with that? How am I supposed to just keep saying, okay, just trust and believe that stuff is going to be okay, but it doesn't turn out that way.
You're listening to a conversation between Sergeant Dave Mutchler, president of the River City Fraternal Order of Police, Tara Pruitt, a local Black Lives Matter activist, and David James, a Louisville Metro councilman. We'll be back with more after a break. You're listening to WFPL. Welcome back to The Next Louisville, a partnership between WFPL and the Community Foundation of Louisville. This hour, we're hosting a conversation between Tara Pruitt, a local Black Lives Matter activist, David James, a Louisville Metro councilman, and Sergeant Dave Mutchler, president of the River City Fraternal Order of Police. I'm Jake Ryan, and to start our last segment, we ask Sergeant Mutchler how the proliferation of cell phones and police body cameras have changed policing.
Well, it has changed policing, but I think sometimes they're not the reasons that people think. And by example, what I mean is uses of force are down. I think the number they said was 35%. I'm a believer, and my members believe, that that's not because there were instances that police would have used force before, but now they're not doing it as much as it is. They know we have cameras too. So that has the potential to stop someone from a bad act that they know is now going to be on video. There can be no lie. There can be I didn't do it. It can't happen when we have it on video. And I think it leads to less incidences where we might need to use force. I think that's a large part of it.
What are your thoughts on the concept of the Ferguson effect, which is to say that police officers are less proactive in doing their job as a police officer because they know that they might be filmed and there might be ramifications in the media or on social media because of something that they do?
I think that's a real thing. I don't think it rises necessarily all the time to the level that some people think it does. I mean, I can tell you that Louisville Metro Police officers are out there doing their job very proactively still. But I do think, yes, that when you see cases where police officers take an action, and before any investigation happens, before all the facts are out, some people in the community and even the media, and you have an officer that has to go through it being insinuated that they did something wrong or that they, you know, actually committed a crime. And then when all the facts come out in the end, actually that wasn't the case at all. And now this officer's like, well, I don't want that to happen to me. So, yeah, I think it does give pause. But I think part of the problem is that we have a lot of leaders that don't take a tougher stance. You know, it's always horrible when a police officer has to use force, especially deadly force. But when they do that, and you know, that was what they had to do to make sure that they weren't killed or that somebody else wasn't killed, we don't have people standing up saying, hey, look, what do we expect our police to do? To stand there and get killed? And we need more of that. And I'm going to be honest with you. I think that, you know, a large part of that is, and I've mentioned this before, I think that we have a lot of white politicians and a lot of white police chiefs that are afraid to do that because by simply standing up, stating the facts, and saying the police were right, they don't want the movement to come down upon them. I think that's what's happening.
Councilman James, you're in legislation. What do you think about that?
I actually see both sides. I've experienced police shootings that were legally justified, and I've seen police shootings where I thought, what happened, right? You know, for example, you know, we don't know all the facts from these last series of shootings, but I would take the one in Louisiana, for example. When I look at that on video, it makes me go, why would they do that? Why would you shoot that person? Why would you kill that person? Something may have happened that I couldn't see from the video, but that's not a shooting that I feel the police did right. Why would it happen? I'd be very interested to see what the end result of that is. And so I know that Sergeant Mutchler, as the president of the FOP, he is the president of the FOP. He represents the members. So the way that he looks at things and has to speak about things are always going to be very supportive of the police, right? And so the way that she looks at things from representing her organization, she's going to be very supportive of the position of a police accountability, right? And we don't feel safe. The way I look at it, having been a police officer before, being an African-American male and being a legislator, I see both sides of it. I have been racially profiled. I have been stopped. There have been black officers on the Louisville Police Department that have filed suit against the police department for being racially profiled, and they won those lawsuits. And so it has happened, and it does happen. Does it happen very often? No. But does it happen? Yes. And so for African-Americans or people of color, when their rights are violated, or when their life has been taken by the people that are paid by them to protect them, it's not the same as another violation. It is the government that did it, right? The government that you're a part of, the government that for hundreds of years suppressed you and people that look like you. And they used law enforcement as the tool to do that. And so there is a long history of police, almost always Caucasian police, that during the Jim Crow years and the segregation years, the people that enforced those laws were Caucasian police officers. That's what they did. That's what they were paid to do. And so there is a history of feelings from African Americans about police and law enforcement because of that past history. And it's not like all of a sudden in 1965 that everything was great and everything was happy. And so people often have said to me, well, I don't understand this Black Lives Matter movement. You know, slavery's been over with for 200 years. And I'll say, well, when do you think that African Americans were free? And they were like, well, at the end of the Civil War in like 1865 or something. And my reply is, well, I really wasn't free until people like me could vote and drink water and go to restaurants. And that was in the 60s, so that wasn't that long ago. So, and they don't really think of it that way until I say it. And so I think that it's a situation that has to be fixed in America. I think that in order to get it fixed, there are going to have to be some things that make African Americans mad. There are going to have to be some things that make Caucasian people mad. There are going to have to be conversations that take place where all of our feelings get hurt and we come out of it on the other side to say, hey, we've got to do this thing better and we have to treat each other right. And we believe that the police are great and they do good work and that we need them. But we need them to protect us and to treat us the same as everybody else.
The Black Lives Matter movement, though not formed as a direct result of Ferguson, it's really picked up steam since Michael Brown was shot in Ferguson. And though the shooter in Dallas wasn't directly associated with Black Lives Matter, it did happen at a protest, and so there is that correlation between the two. What is it like to be a police officer right now after that violence against police officers in Dallas?
Well, I mean, obviously it's a difficult job from the start, but I think that one of the main issues is that, you know, officers every day are out doing exactly what those officers were doing. And then you have, you know, it basically, that's a terrorist attack on the police is what it is. And, you know, for someone to come and be able to kill, you know, police officers indiscriminately like that, it does make officers obviously acutely aware that, hey, you know, this can happen. This can happen anywhere.
Sticking with the killing of the police officers in Dallas, what did that do to the Black Lives Matter movement?
It made us feel horrible, to be honest, because, again, that's not what we wanted. That's not what we're about. So for anything to happen in that sense to be related to us is just, it's wrong, it's horrible, because that's not what we're about. That's not what we preach. That's not what we want. You know, as far as with the movement, if anything, it's helped us to make sure that we're more concrete about our demands, about what we want, about what we expect as part of people who are part of Black Lives Matter. You know, what we say, what we speak about. Because, again, we don't speak about killing police officers. We don't speak about that. We speak about restorative justice. That's what we speak about. So for that to happen, it's horrible, plain and simple.
Do you think it hurt the perception of Black Lives Matter and the people who do participate in these protests?
Of course, I'm sure, you know, because people are gonna attach it to it. So yeah, I'm sure some people, you know, feel a certain type of way. But to be honest, people felt that way before that happened.
What about from the police standpoint? What did that shooting do to how police see the Black Lives Matter movement?
Well, there's a couple things. I think first of all, you know, when the police go out and are at a rally or a gathering or a protest or whatever it is, obviously we have a job to do as sworn police officers, and that is to make sure that, you know, everything stays civil and that people are protected, that people can exercise their First Amendment right, that people don't get hurt, and the property's not destroyed. But it also makes officers, you know, acutely aware that, you know, these things happened. These shootings happened, you know, by people who purported to have the same ideology or feelings as what many officers feel is coming from the Black Lives Matter movement. And so obviously we're not suggesting that, you know, that protest in Dallas that, you know, that was a planned part of that event. But you know, you're going to have people that think that, you know, they're going to ratchet it up, so to speak. And I think that it does cause a larger discord between officers and the folks who want to civilly and legally exercise their right, you know, to be part of any movement.
Last year, you wrote a letter. You said, quote, "To the sensationalists, liars, and race baiters, we are done with you. At first, it was good enough just to sit back and watch your ridiculous spectacle. No more." This was seen as an aggressive communication from you. Do you still feel, I mean, do you still hold these feelings that you put down in this letter?
Sure. I mean, here's the thing. You know, it's amazing that we have people that, and they should, feel like that they can say what they need to say, you know, utilize their First Amendment rights, be protected while they're doing it, but God forbid that the police can do the same thing. And this is the problem. This is why change is so slow, because nobody wants to be blunt. It's a big dance. It's a dance around the issues. And a lot of it has to do with politicians. So my point is that, you know, we don't have leaders that will step up and say, look, you know, every citizen deserves to be able to scrutinize police actions. Every citizen deserves the right, if they have their civil rights violated or they have a complaint, to complain to the police. It should be investigated. If the police are doing the wrong thing, it should be fixed. Or if it's criminal, officers should go to prison. If it's not criminal, but you know, it's such a drastic event, officers should be fired. We don't have any problem with all that. But at the same time, when you have rhetoric and what I called spectacles that are not based on fact, that are untrue, they're there to get people riled up for reasons that are not even factual, and I'm talking about, for instance, like Michael Brown, things like that, then yes, I think somebody needs to step up and say that, but most people won't.
But do you think that being so blunt can hurt the situation in general? It seems like after this, there were protests after this. Do you regret writing the letter, one, and do you think that there is time to hold back on the bluntness and maybe have a conversation before doing something so aggressive?
Well, first of all, no, I don't regret writing the letter. But you know, I'll tell you that, you know, the thing that the people don't realize, the why it was so important as well, is that, you know, it's easy. We can have conversations, and we should. That's good. I mean, that's how you have to have civil discourse, obviously. But you know, there was events that happened, a lot of them not in Kentucky, a lot of them not in Louisville, but just nationally, that were basically, you know, where police were generalized. And that's the thing that also is extremely problematic for a lot of police officers, is that, hang on a minute, that's the whole reason we have a Black Lives Matter movement, is because you're saying that, you know, you were generalized, and that, you know, that black people were looked down on, weren't treated properly, and all this, and now you're doing it to us.
Do you feel like this letter meant to represent everyone that is on Louisville Metro's police department?
No, it may not, but I can tell you that it does. It does. What I've said there, the facts that I've stated, you know, how we feel about law-abiding citizens, that we thank our citizens, that, you know, that we expect everyone to abide by the law and things like that. I think absolutely that a majority of the members feel that way. It's not meant to be, an op-ed, so to speak. It's meant to say, look, we have these things in place, and you can't just change the facts to be what you want them to be to further whatever your agenda is. And unfortunately, I think that does happen, you know, sometimes, not just here, but around the country. And we have to keep the facts straight and the evidence transparent, so that when people make comments or issue statements that are blatantly false, someone has to say, hey, that's not what happened, though.
I want to address the letter really quick and say that while I understand that was his point of view, it was very crass. And it did come off as aggressive. And it did come off as threatening. And it's one of those things where it gave off the feed of, you know, we as police officers, we're going to use our power to do what we want to do, how we want to do it. So that's how it came off from a community perspective. So I believe that's the issue, is that's how we start, is that these type of letters shouldn't come out. You know, if you have an issue, what we do is in our movement is that we try to call people in before we call them out. And I believe that's where the issue was, is that we should have been called in. If you had an issue with what we said, you know, and I understand he feels like he had an issue with what we said, but we should have been called in instead of being called out. And that's the biggest thing, is that we try to make sure that we call people in before we call them out. And then if we feel like you don't want to be called in, then yes, we are going to call you out. And that's where that issue comes into play.
So we're running out of time, but I do want to touch on one more topic, if we do have a couple minutes, and that is, what's next? What do police misunderstand about Black Lives Matter? What do they need to understand so we can move forward in a positive way?
We are just about accountability. We're about justice. We're about doing what's right. And it's at the point where, yes, we say Black Lives Matter because history has shown us that Black lives do not matter. And so that's why we speak about it. So even though it might have sprung from you know, Trayvon Martin, or people are saying because of the Ferguson effect, no, this has been going on since we came over here, since African-Americans were brought over here, is that we've been fighting for the right to be considered equal. And so moving forward, that's what we want to happen, is that we want to be considered equal citizens, period.
How can we get that idea into actual practice?
I think it comes down to people being honest about their stereotypes, about their prejudices, about their fears, and being open about that, and being willing to admit that, and being willing to figure out how they can get past that and get over that. Because as he said, you know, painting a broad stroke, most African-American men are painted broad strokes as being criminals, as being thugs, all of that, you know, and so getting past those stereotypes is the main thing. And then people willing to step outside of their box as well. Like what we're doing now, I think this is a great start, what we're doing now, to be able to express ourselves, to say how we feel and see how the other side feels as well. And then take that and see how we can work on those solutions to move forward.
Sergeant Mushler, what do Black Lives Matter protesters not understand about being a cop?
Police officers don't have any issue with a movement about Black lives and Black lives mattering. But I think that in order for this disengagement to go anywhere, I think the movement is going to have to take steps to show that that's what it really is, and not just an anti-police movement, because that's what a lot of law enforcement officers in this country feel like it is.
Not anti-police. Anti-police brutality. Plain and simple.
So how do we move forward?
Well, I mean, that's a hard thing to say. It's going to take, obviously, a lot of people from all sides to be brave, to stand up, to continue to do the right thing. It's going to take, I think, that you know, leaders that are in place and future leaders to actually strive to get something meaningful done.
Like what? I mean, what is something meaningful?
Well, something meaningful like, you know, showing the public, look, this is what we do. This is why we do it. You know, it's one of the things, like, for instance, after grand jury proceedings, when people get upset because an officer isn't indicted or something like that. I think that finding a way to you know, those proceedings are secret by law a lot of times, but to get transcripts out to show people actual witness testimonies and things like that so they can actually see what really happened instead of, you know, you start out with a group saying this is what happened or this is what they think happened, and then the media latches on, and the next thing you know, I mean, 2 days after Ferguson, it was too late. It was too late to say, oh, no. Let me show you the facts. It was too late. People had decided what the facts were. So I think that's a large part of it, is making sure that everybody knows, you know, exactly what happened. And the biggest thing, I think, is that these incidents have to be investigated. People want scrutiny, not just Black Lives Matter. Regular citizens deserve scrutiny of police use of deadly force. But in order for that scrutiny to happen, there has to be a full, complete investigation. And people can't just make their mind up what happened. No matter how bad one video looks, you have to investigate the situation. We've all seen, you know, cases where you see a video of something and something actually totally opposite of what happened was happening. I mean, we have to allow these things to be investigated, scrutinized, and the facts to come to light before we rush to judgment and say that, you know, this person was wrong or that person was wrong or, you know, the police in this city are brutal or whatever the case might be.
Councilman James, what can our local leadership do to make sure these tensions ease up a bit and the relationship improves?
I think facilitating opportunities for conversations like this to take place. I don't think that we're ever going to get to a point where everybody's going to be singing Kumbaya and everything's going to be happy, but I think there needs to be a level of understanding. But also think that it's a bigger conversation than what we're having right now. You asked earlier about the numbers of police interactions and things like that. Well, that happens because crime takes place in high poverty areas because people are desperate, okay? And so wherever crime takes place, there are going to be police, right? Because people call for police in those areas. And so there's a study that was done, the richest 400 people in America own more wealth than all 41 million African Americans combined. All right? So what that means is that the areas that we're talking about, that Sergeant Mutchler was talking about, where police are deployed to, happen to be African American areas. Why? Because there's extremely high poverty there. And so until we deal with the issues of poverty and social justice, then these things are going to continue to happen. And so I think that Black Lives Matter is not simply about police don't shoot or the police in particular. It's about social justice for people of color. And so I think that has to be a part of the conversation, because if we lay the entire thing on the shoulders of the police, we're not going to solve anything. It's a matter of an issue of public policy for our local government, for our state government, and for our federal government. I think we need to appreciate both sides of this. You know, I'm not a police officer anymore, so I don't carry a gun anymore. I depend on police officers to protect me. I think that the police are that fine line that separates society from chaos to civility, right? And I think they have a really, really hard job to do. And we all have the privilege of sitting back 3 days later and playing back the videotape over and over again and going, well, I should have done that, or she should have done that, and that kind of thing. But I think it's important that we support our police officers. But I also think it's important that we hold them accountable and scrutinize the different things that they do sometimes. Because having been a police officer, I know that sometimes you can get in this bubble and only think about police stuff, right? Just like sometimes I get in a bubble and only think about Metro Council stuff. And I'm sure that with Black Lives Matter, sometimes you can just get into the moment and just be focused on that. And we all have to look at this thing as we're all in this boat together, right? Because I also applaud the police for doing what they do. People are shooting it at them and shooting at people in a crowd, and they run into that to protect other people. They did it twice in the last 2 weeks, right? They demonstrated that. And that is something that not everybody will do. And that's why we pay police to do it. So I think it's important that we take care of our police, pay them well, because they protect our lives. I think it's important that citizens have the right to say what their thoughts are and to express their feelings. I think that Black Lives Matter expressing their feelings about how they feel that they are sometimes treated by bad police officers or government is very important, because if they don't say those things, those are things that other people are thinking, right? I've thought it. And so I understand both sides of it, you know, and I think it's important that David Mutchler says what he feels and what his membership feels and what they express to him. And I don't think he should have to be ashamed of what that may be, because he has the right to say it. Now, did David and I have a conversation after he wrote the letter, and I said, maybe you should have wrote that a little bit different. You know, I did do that, right? But I think that I have a relationship with him where I can have that conversation, just like I have a relationship with Black Lives Matter. And I do call people in Black Lives Matter sometimes, and I say, hey, have you thought about this? Or, you know, I think that we all have to have that comfort level. Like, I would love that when we walk away from here, that they have each other's phone numbers and they can have conversations, you know, and have that comfort level saying, hey, I saw this on Facebook, and it makes me uncomfortable. Or this happened, and can you tell me why it happened? I think that's important, and I think that we can get someplace by doing those type of things.
This has been a conversation between David James, a Louisville Metro councilman, Tara Pruitt, a local Black Lives Matter activist, and Sergeant Dave Mutchler, president of the River City Fraternal Order of Police. This conversation was part of The Next Louisville, a partnership between WFPL and the Community Foundation of Louisville. Subscribe to Next Louisville episodes wherever you get your podcasts, and visit us online at nextlouisville.wfpl.org. I'm Jake Ryan. Thanks for listening.